Hello and welcome to the Chona Living Podcast. My name is Charlie and I'm joined by Austin.
Hey.
This is our fourth episode and today we're talking about gaming in China. For those who are listening, there may be some who don't know that we're located in China. We are specifically in Chengdu, which is the capital of Sichuan Province in the southwestern region of the People's Republic of China. And having been residents of China for several years and those who play games, we've had to find solutions to a number of small issues which are relevant to anybody who's playing games in China. Whether you're playing console games or PC games or mobile games, the landscape in China for games is quite different from the West, especially. And in this podcast, we wanted to share some information about kind of what we've learned and help people overcome some of these obstacles, which we've already found solutions for.
And I'd like to go ahead and just make a little side note here. Just in preparing for this, it really made me realize how much of a bubble China is just in finding news about China and what's pertinent to gaming here was not very easy. It was pretty difficult to find relevant, up-to-date, current news on English or foreign websites.
Yeah, there's not much. I mean, a lot of the discussion about China is from the perspective of Western developers. So there are a lot of Western developers who are looking at China because it's such a big and potentially lucrative market. And they're trying to figure out, how can we publish our game in China or how can we reach users inside China? And so this perspective is one which is discussed a lot on websites like Gamasutra, which are specifically for game developers. But especially for someone who's just a resident in China and just wants to play games, it is pretty hard to find information on kind of what's going on. And there's not really one place where you can learn all that. So that's certainly true. And also being able to read Chinese makes it a lot easier to find some of this information.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for us, we are primarily Steam gamers, although we in previous podcasts have talked about a lot of the consoles which we've owned over the last couple of years. I have gotten rid of all of my consoles and you've picked up the Wii U. But other than that, we are pretty much Steam players. So we wanted to start by first talking about Steam in China. Steam actually was not officially in China until relatively recently, 2015, when Valve brought Steam into a number of new different regions, including China. And it was at that point where they allowed transactions to happen from inside China using China's currency, which is the renminbi.
Right. And it is still kind of bypassing a lot of the official censorship things and a lot of things that are in place for typical games here.
Yeah, absolutely. So culture in China, for those who don't know, is tightly controlled. Whether we're talking about games or movies or music or television shows, Western publishers of these things cannot just come to China and release whatever game or television show or movie they like. They have to go through a really onerous approval process, which is kind of designed to keep foreign influence out of China, because China is kind of a complex country. It is a communist country, as a lot of people know, but it also has a lot of kind of free market capitalist mechanisms in place. But for content creators like game developers, it's really difficult to navigate this regulatory environment because it's kind of specifically made to keep people out. But on the subject of Steam itself, Steam has not gone through this process. So as of now, any developer can get their game into the Steam China store without going through this regulatory process. And the body of the Chinese government which controls this is China's State Administration of Press, Publication, Radio, Film, and Television, which is one of the biggest mouthful acronyms ever, SAPPRFT.
As our a lot of the other official organizations around this too, like the Ministry of Infrastructure. I don't know.
Everything's like a ministry, yeah. You know? Everything has like some grandiose communist kind of vibe to it.
So I'd like to go ahead and just mention some of the things real quick that go into the censorship with games, which I have a list of. The video games in China are subject to the policies of censorship in China, whether or not they are violating basic principles of the Constitution of People's Republic of China, threatening national unity, sovereignty, and territorial integrity, divulging state secrets, threatening state security, damaging national sovereignty, disturbing social order, and infringing upon others' rights.
It's a long list.
It's a long list.
Basically, the way that it works is a game developer, and they just changed these laws recently over the last 2 years for mobile game developers. And mobile games is the biggest sector of the gaming industry in China. The way it works is a developer submits their app to be approved by the regulatory body. And it usually takes, I think, several months for them to go through this regulatory process. And then no one knows kind of what happens during that time. No one really knows who's checking it or where it happens or exactly what the criteria is. But mobile developers have to also provide a device along with the app or the game. So they'll install the game onto a phone and then send it to this regulatory group and then wait for a really long time, right? For months. Yeah. And so developers in China are really concerned about this because anybody who's a small developer can't really afford to do this. Having to wait, you know, months before your game can go online, when you have rent to pay and you have salaries to pay, can break you pretty much. I mean, if the game gets rejected, then the only recourse is to resubmit it and go through the whole process all over again. So there's really a very, very steep overhead for game developers in China for going through the official methods. But for Steam, Steam hasn't been doing that. And that is a great thing for us and for everybody who's on Steam. And Steam in China, this is the third largest region in the world for Steam. The biggest are two are the United States and Russia, and China is the third. And since they introduced the renminbi into China in 2015, they have also brought with that localized prices for games. So it was, I guess, about a year and a half ago that I switched my account to the China store from the US store. And immediately, I found so many benefits.
Yeah, you caught up to my Steam library pretty quickly.
The first benefit was that the costs are about half as much as in the United States. So whereas like Grand Theft Auto 5, for example, and this is another good example of a game which you would think would be banned immediately because the game has so many themes of sex and violence, things which go against, you know, what the censors in China like to keep out.
I mean, most of the things that I've seen blocked are like blatant, just command and conquer generals with the just, you build things like that are national things of importance that get destroyed in the game.
And that's one where China is like the villain too.
Yeah.
But I mean, this, it's much simpler to make a list of what is approved rather than what is blocked.
Yeah.
I mean, the default state is pretty much blocked, right? And then it's more like a white list than a black list.
Yeah. Well, some games also get slightly altered to be allowed to appear here. Like in some of the character models for things in World of Warcraft were not deemed appropriate, so they were slightly altered. Like skeletons had skin put on them because they thought, I mean, I think it's ridiculous because it's a pretty cartoonish game, but it's
these, yes. That's a really interesting example. So World of Warcraft, it was released in China by a major Chinese publisher, and World of Warcraft is massive in China. I mean, I think it's not as big now because of League of Legends has kind of taken away a lot of its thunder. But for many, many years, World of Warcraft was huge in China. It was on the side of Coke cans. There were buses with World of Warcraft advertisements. It was like really, really big mainstream game. And so in that case, that's one where they'd say, all right, we're going to modify this game to suit the Chinese market. But that those cases are extremely rare.
Yeah.
Very, very few of those. In the case of World of Warcraft, though, they have laws, rules against undead, like creatures of the undead.
Yeah.
They also have science fiction. So a lot of Western movies in particular, like sci-fi movies, don't come to China because China does not allow depictions of the future, like common depictions of the future, like Western, you know, sort of depictions. And what I've heard is the reason why is because these commonly do not include communism. Like communism, they've gone beyond communism in like the popular science fiction picture of what the future looks like. And that is incompatible with the censor's view of what is allowed in China.
We won't allow that. If you come to us with a vision of the future that portrays communism as the dopest, coolest form of government, then send that film our way.
You know, it almost would be really novel to have like a sci-fi future story where like communism is like the central theme.
Yeah.
It's like communism makes some kind of comeback and like takes over Earth and then gets like sent to another planet. I mean, both of these things are like just laughably cartoonish.
Yeah.
You know, for like banning sci-fi, first of all, or just like having some kind of communist dominated sci-fi future.
Right.
But, you know, China's a place of kind of crazy, surreal rules and laws, many of which are ignored. So when we talk about games which are banned and censorship in China, every single game that you can possibly imagine is available inside China. So
yeah, I mean, this is probably touching upon some of the other things I want to bring up in today, but about piracy.
Piracy, absolutely. Yeah. So piracy is the main way through which games have been distributed in China for decades.
I mean, this is probably a good point for me to bring up consoles in China and the ban.
The ban on consoles, yeah.
So the sale of consoles was banned in 2000 by the Chinese government. They feared that consoles would have adverse effects on the Chinese youth. And I mean, really, the ban, which sounds like it would be a terrible thing, did not have a huge impact on people playing games in China. People still continued to play games, obviously, for the last, you know, 17 years or so since then. And in January of 2014, the ban was effectively lifted when the Ministry of Culture felt that foreign firms could manufacture consoles in a Shanghai free trade zone and go through this whole process of having every console inspected and all this. But during all of that time, people were still importing, you know, Xbox 360s and Wiis and all this stuff.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, I came to China in 2005.
Right.
And when I came, one of the most compelling and like surreal things about China at that time was going to these markets where you could buy all this bootleg media.
With everything on it already.
With everything, anything you could possibly want. It was like a Best Buy where it's like everything cost $1.
I mean, I remember before I came to China, I had a friend just after I got out of high school, I believe, talking to me about all the trouble he was going through to crack his PlayStation 3. And
in China, you spend like $5 yeah. and someone else will crack it for you. I mean, what they've traditionally done in China is when you buy a console, they crack it for you. It's hard to imagine a scenario up until just a few years ago where anyone in China would buy a console and not crack the console, because crack games were just so prolific.
Yeah.
So you would go into these markets, like in Chengdu, there's in every city in China, they have these markets still. And they're kind of starting to disappear now because everything is going online and everyone streams media and downloads it rather than buying physical media like CDs and DVDs.
And they don't want to crack my Wii U.
They're over it. They're like, get on the Switch, bro. We're done with the Wii U.
But actually, another thing that is of note, though, is even after the ban was lifted, consoles in China actually cost more at release than they do in other countries.
A lot more. Yeah. Actually, this was what's so interesting about the unbanning. So consoles were banned for 17 years. And then when they unban them, it's like a really big, you know, global kind of story for a period, right? And the story is China has banned consoles for so long. And the impression that people have outside of China is that China hasn't had consoles. And like now they're going to have consoles and there's a billion people who are suddenly going to be playing video games. And this is like not the truth at all. I mean, the truth is that everyone who wants a console in China already has one and has had one for a long time because they've been for sale the entire time, despite being, quote, banned. And actually, the ban is only on the distribution of consoles.
Right.
Not on owning them.
Yeah.
So I've actually been in Computer City. This is like a really great memory or a really great thing to witness if you have the opportunity in China. So what happens is in these computer markets, they're routinely stormed by police who are searching for illicit materials which are being sold. So inside these markets, it's about, I don't know, 85% illegal material, which is being sold. Copied DVDs, copied games, copied everything you can possibly imagine. That's pretty much what most of the market is all about. So they have these routine kind of events where police just storm into the market. And I've been upstairs when this happens, and it's just really fascinating. So here's how it goes. So there are dozens of vendors who have all their games or movies all lined out, you know, where you can, for browsing, right? For customers. And they get a call on a telephone or a walkie-talkie. They have like a communication system. So people downstairs at the ground level can see when the police are coming up. And so they issue the call out to everybody. And so all the vendors get the call and it says, you know, police are coming. So all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, there's all this furious activity to cover all the games. So they take these big sheets out, or they hurriedly, you know, drop everything into boxes and then just like put it under the surface of the table, right? And then the police come up, and they're uniformed police, and they're just kind of browsing around, looking around. And there's all these vendors there, dozens of them, who are just standing in front of blanketed display cases. And they're just like, and the cops are like, yep, nothing going on here. They walk around for a few minutes and then they leave, and then they take the blankets out and everything resumes. And this just happens all the time. And witnessing this, I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, yeah. How are these cops actually that dumb? Like, they don't know what's going on? Or is their job just to come up and make sure that no one's like flagrantly selling something without a blanket over it? Like, what is going on here? But basically, China is a place of many rules, and most of those rules being broken.
Yeah, China is a place where you have to find your way around the rules.
So when consoles became legal because of the import tax, which they have to pay, the cost is way higher than it is even for illegally imported ones.
So actually, I contacted several of my Chinese friends to talk to them specifically about whether or not they would want a mainland Xbox or a mainland whatever. All of them said, one thing that's nice about it is that you have the warranty, but I don't care enough about the warranty to pay the higher price of a mainland console and have to deal with all the BS that goes along with that.
It's locked to China.
Yeah. So everybody, all of my Chinese friends that I spoke to about this said that they would not buy a mainland one, or they already have a Hong Kong version or something like that. So
what people have been doing for years is, because Taiwan and Hong Kong operate under different laws, and they don't have these regulatory bodies which keep all the games out, and Ministry of Culture and so on. These games have, I mean, games like, you know, Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto or whatever, every game you can imagine basically has been available in Taiwan and in Hong Kong. And Taiwan is, they speak Mandarin. They speak the same language that mainland China speaks. They just use traditional characters. In Hong Kong, they speak Cantonese, which is a different form of Chinese, but they also use traditional Chinese characters. So they can read the same text, assuming that, you know, not everyone in the mainland can read traditional characters. But for all of my friends, like one of my good friends who has PlayStation 4 and has been playing a lot of consoles, he just buys Hong Kong versions of games.
Right.
And he's been doing that for years. So people inside China could just easily buy these Hong Kong versions and play the game in Chinese, and in most cases even have the voice in Mandarin.
Yeah.
If the game is released in Taiwan.
And you can play games that would have been banned or something otherwise. You can still play all of those games, which otherwise would not be available here.
Right. So for developers who want to get into China, I actually deal with this a lot through my job. So I work with independent developers who are abroad and who are interested in publishing their game in China. And it's this insanely complex process, as we've been talking about. So what most developers do is they just don't go through it. And the only ones who do go through it generally are the biggest developers or the biggest properties in the world, like World of Warcraft. Plants vs. Zombies was really big in China. Counter-Strike Go is in China. That's really big. And League of Legends. And League of Legends is actually kind of a good example of a really popular game, not only, you know, actually coming out in China and becoming big and successful in China, which is very rare, but actually becoming a Chinese game itself.
I mean, yeah, it's been purchased by Tencent.
Exactly. Yeah. So Riot, the developer of League of Legends, was acquired by Tencent. And there are actually a string of other big developers who've been acquired in the same way. The second biggest one is Supercell, which is in Helsinki, Finland.
Developer. Oh, I didn't even realize they've been acquired now by Tencent. I thought they were a majority stakeholder. Tencent was, but they acquired them.
That's right. Yeah, they didn't acquire them outright. They're a majority stakeholder, I think. Or maybe they did acquire them completely. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
In any case, Supercell has Chinese owners now.
Yeah.
So this is a big change from what they were doing. You know, previously there were, like, a good example is Tai Chi Panda. Have you ever heard of this game?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Tai Chi Panda is a game that was developed by NetEase and published by Snail Games. And a lot of developers in China were trying to become successful outside of China for a long time. And I mean, they still are, but they've changed their strategy and the new strategy is a lot more effective. But what they were doing previously was taking games which were very successful inside China and then localizing them for a global audience. And so Tai Chi Panda is an example of this. And they actually hired Ronda Rousey to be a spokesperson of the game. Are you familiar with Ronda Rousey?
No.
She's one of the most famous UFC fighters in the world.
Okay.
So she's like a multiple time world champion fighter.
And also they had her fight with the Tai Chi Panda.
Yeah. So she's like a beautiful, sought after spokesperson. Okay. Right? Obviously they paid like a ridiculous sum of money to get her. And this was, now she's kind of had a fall from grace, but this was when she was kind of at the top of the game. So Tai Chi Panda had Ronda Rousey promoting their game in the West, and they actually paid for super expensive advertising with the UFC. So for a period, when you would see big UFC fights, there was a giant Tai Chi Panda logo at the bottom of the octagon. So all of the live feeds, which were on pay-per-view, and all the replays, which were on YouTube, were showing this Tai Chi Panda game. And it's funny because they spent so many countless millions of dollars to do this, and
it didn't pan out.
It seemed like no one really noticed. No one really cared, you know? And this is kind of what happened to almost all of the Chinese developers with global ambitions.
I mean, they don't really, a lot of them don't translate to the same a lot of it is either pay to win. I mean, I think a good example of a game that's popular here that would not go over well anywhere else is a Counter-Strike clone called Crossfire.
You know, that's actually Korean.
Oh, that's Korean.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very popular here, though, right?
And yeah, very popular.
In the Asian market, I guess. And it's essentially pay to win.
Yeah. I don't think it's even popular in Korea. I think it's like China is like its major market.
Yeah.
Crossfire is a blatant copy of Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
If to anyone listening to this, if we were to show you a video of Crossfire, you would say, no, you're mistaken. That's Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
So it looks the exact same. So with Tai Chi Panda and this kind of larger strategy of trying to make Chinese games popular outside of China, it just didn't work at all because there's a lot of reasons, but the cultural gap is so big. I mean, you can't just take a game which works in China and even make some modifications to it and expect it to get traction outside of China. So it seems like China as a whole abandoned that strategy and just moved toward acquiring Western developers who already have a proven track record of global success with games like Clash of Clans or League of Legends. And that really works because they obviously have the bankroll and they lack the knowledge of how to make these type of games. So the acquisition,
synergistic.
Yeah. So the acquisition model is what China is doing now. So certainly look for more big Western developers to get acquired or invested by. Tencent in particular. Tencent is the biggest, I think it's the biggest company in Asia.
Yeah, it's huge. And speaking on that matter, Tencent did just go and acquire a lot of the only publisher to publish these games in China on Tencent's own gaming platform to rival Steam here, such as Rocket League.
Yeah, so this is super new news. So for anyone who hasn't heard this news, tell the news.
Yeah, what was it, about a week ago or so, Tencent has a gaming gaming platform here. I think that's been called Tencent Game Platform or something like that, TGP. They have changed the name to WeGame. And it actually currently boasts 200 million users compared to Steam's global 125.
Yeah, but they're all in China.
They're all in China, though. So at this point, we don't necessarily know whether or not Tencent is planning on to combat against Steam globally, but they are...
Well, we do. So the news is not... The news is that this has been rebranded from TGP into WeGame, and that now they're targeting overseas users. So they're going outside China now.
Yeah.
And that they're competing directly with Steam.
They are competing directly with Steam, but I mean, at this point, their 200 million users are within their, I mean, they develop the acquisition of these rights is to publish these games in China. So after this happened, Rocket League was removed from the Steam store in China, as well as all the other games announced.
Well, so they announced they're that they're they announced on Steam, that they're
hold international.
On, hold on. They announced that they're going to publish Rocket League in China.
Right.
So this free changes nothing for Rocket League outside of China.
Exactly. That's my point. So internationally, they have not really changed things, but for China, it's a huge thing. You know, I mean, it's already almost double the users
of
Steam totally.
Sure, sure. But when you talk about numbers in China, it gets big quick.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're saying like, oh, this many users, like, is it in China? Okay, well, then the number's going to be gigantic. It's going to be much bigger. Also, it's something like 70 or 80% of people who are on the internet in China are classified as gamers.
Right.
So that alone is like 800 million people or something. I mean, it's a ridiculously large number of people. But from what I've seen, most people talking about this WeGame announcement and Steam now having a extremely well-funded, motivated competitor in China is that it probably won't make that much of a difference for people outside China. They're still going to choose Steam.
Steam is
still going to be the go-to platform because it's built such a strong reputation and it has a head start of a decade plus, and it just has a lot of important assets which Tencent and WeChat do not have outside of China. But for those of us inside of China, it's pretty scary for Steam.
Terrifying. I mean if Tencent, I mean, with the way business is done here, it is scary to think that Tencent, with its ties, with its strong ties to the government and everything, that it's going to find a way to be really successful and push Steam out of China.
Right. So what you mean by the way things are done here, I think, is that the more well-connected rival in China usually buries the competition.
Yeah.
So the fear is that China will be banned or blocked, or basically will have to go through this authorization, this regulatory process, which we talked about previously, and that would eliminate 99% of the games in the Steam China store.
Or they're going to do something like what they're doing with all these games and just basically make Steam redundant in China because of the games that you want to buy are not available on Steam. They're only available on WeGame. Now, for international, you know, users like us, we will probably want to continue using Steam and find other ways to purchase our games, either through the Humble Store, GOG, or something. But
no. I mean, my thought, if that does come to pass, which it seems like 50-50, it seems like pretty likely.
Yeah.
You know, it could happen. If Steam China gets shut down, which would be very sad, there are millions and millions of users, I think they would switch to Steam in another region. And certainly for myself, I 100% would do that.
Yeah.
I would definitely just switch back to the United States. And really the only two things that would change are, number one, I would be paying twice as much for games, which is not a big deal because the games are already so cheap now. I'm like buying stuff that I'm not even playing, or I'm playing a year after I purchase it. So paying more is not a big issue for me. But secondly, it means I could no longer pay using my Chinese bank card. Yeah.
So for, you know, Chinese people with their Steam account, they don't necessarily have a bank card in another country they can use to purchase games in a different region.
You know, I feel like China's will find a way.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Jurassic Park, you know, like China finds a way. It's going to find some illicit method to bypass this block if it comes to pass. And I mean, one example of this would be Taobao, which is like an unregulated eBay in China, yeah, where there's all manner of illicit things sold. And I think if people were to switch to other regions of Steam, there would be things like Steam charge cards,
right,
for Hong Kong or whatever. I think that there would be some way around it. But honestly, having gone this long with Steam now being the third largest region in the world, you know, and for Steam China, and to still not be regulated at all is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like a small oversight. It's like a major platform with like tens of millions of users that is just totally unregulated.
It's just like there's just this, you know, huge blinder on one side of their head or something. And they just, you know, they're like, I haven't heard about that. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, actually, I think one of the biggest regions in the world for Grand Theft Auto 5 is China.
People love that game here. Yeah. I mean, I have students who can barely speak English and they're like, "Oh, you like games?" And I'm like, "I love games." And they're like, "GTA? CS?" They just know like those things, you know? And everything they talk about is always acronyms.
Yes.
GTA, CS, LOL.
FBI, OMG, WTF, BBQ.
Yeah.
If you look online at Grand Theft Auto 5, like the user base on Steam Spy, then you'll see that China has one of the biggest number of online players. And it's crazy because this is like one of the most obscene games that is out there. And it's so big in China. So it does seem like some kind of weird omission. Like everything else is so tightly controlled in China and this is somehow overlooked. So I wonder if we've just been really lucky with this or what will happen. But certainly with this recent news of WeGame publishing Rocket League in China, I'm sure there's going to be more games like that.
Well, you know, I think part of it is just waiting for the infrastructure to catch up with things. So, I mean, at some point we may see some sort of shift, but so far things have been really great. Like one thing to point out, you bring up Rocket League. Even Rocket League getting released in China is a pretty cool thing, even if we could not play it online before due to the great firewall of China. And GTA,
yeah, I had a like kind of debate on Reddit,
yeah,
with somebody over this. And he was very critical of Tencent publishing this game. And he was like, you know, fucking Tencent publishing Rocket League. Why can't the developer just publish it themselves? You know, he clearly just,
didn't understand.
Yeah. Like how the landscape in China really works. But for those of us who are living inside China, I bought Rocket League like as soon as it came out and loved it. And we played it at CGF. And it has never worked online here ever. Because the Google servers, the game is run on, right?
Yeah.
So everything Google in China is blocked, and Rocket League servers are run by Google. So the multiplayer component of the game, which is pretty much the meat of the game, I mean, it's intended to be a multiplayer online game.
Yeah,
doesn't work in China and has never worked in China, and now for the first time will work in China,
which is exciting.
Yeah,
really exciting for a lot of people to get to play that game.
Yeah, it's good news. I mean, obviously, ideal outcome would be for nothing to be blocked in China, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to happen like in the foreseeable future at all. So, barring that remote possibility, the best case scenario is
to
what
find
we're
another
seeing.
Way to, yeah.
Yeah. So the game's going to actually be playable in China and it's going to be free to play, which I think the free to play business model is going to work really well for this game.
It's going to work great for China as well. I think the market, I think, will eat that up and want to spend money on the game. So we'll see how it works. But,
you know, I mean, I kind of feel like Rocket League might work better as a free to play game everywhere.
Maybe.
The DLC is such a big component of it. They just added the Fast and the Furious, the Vin Diesel car, whatever it is. Anyway, there's, and they have the Back to the Future DeLorean. There's all these different DLC packages for the game, and the DLC seems to have done really well. Rocket League has absolutely flourished as an esport. It's become so big. And I feel like making it free to play, the user base in China, I mean, this could be a massive, massive game in China.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to look like 2 years from now, but it's hard to imagine that this will not be a smashing success because it's been so big all around the world. And because Tencent has this super powerful monopoly position where almost anything that Tencent pushes immediately goes to hundreds of millions of people. So there's kind of no other publisher in the world like Tencent, because Tencent and NetEase control about 80% of the gaming market in China. And so they have control pretty much not like anything else on Earth. There's really no other region in the world of gaming where there's one player who has so much power and so much influence. And so Tencent is just like the gatekeeper.
Yeah. So that game specifically has problems due to the Google servers, right? Even if you're not playing on Google servers, you still run into issues just due to the Great Firewall, and has three entry points into China: Beijing, Shanghai, and Guangzhou. Even if you're playing another game, we were playing Rainbow Six Siege a lot, and occasionally we had major problems, not necessarily just due to Uplay, but due to server-side issues.
Yeah, there are a lot of online games which don't work in China or are just too slow because we're going through the Great Wall, which introduces a lot of latency. But for games which are popular in China and have servers inside China, it's like I'm playing with somebody in the next room.
Yeah.
It's like no latency whatsoever.
It's great. I mean, the infrastructure is still being developed and everything. As long as you live in a developed city such as Chengdu or Beijing or Shanghai, though, then you are good to go to play online with people within China if the servers are within China or they've established a good server base at an entry point, like so, Hong Kong or
right,
something.
Right. Yeah. We've actually made a list on our website of multiplayer games which we've tried and tested and we can certify work well inside China. And it's a pretty small list. It's like 15 games or so. Recently, we tried Deceit, and that was not that... Or Dead by Daylight, that was another one like where we ran into some issues.
Yeah, that was really cool game that just did not work out as well as I was hoping it would.
Yeah, basically we're looking for mostly peer-to-peer games. So yeah, not ones which connect to a server. What is the Ubisoft one? For Honor?
Yeah.
That was one that like a lot of people downloaded, and like a lot of games can just cause like these kind of, you go through this whole process of installing a game, playing it, and then finding out that it doesn't connect, or it does connect, but it's like a huge amount of latency.
Yeah.
The general situation with the internet in China is connecting to everything inside China is lightning fast. And then connecting to everything outside China is often really slow.
Yeah. There's one other thing I want to touch on a little bit, and that is VR and its recent boom in popularity in China.
Yeah, I noticed another VR bar yesterday. Riding my bike, I saw like a big VR sign.
Was that the one over in Mozichao?
No, it's right by the range. It's on First Ring.
Yeah, Road. That's what I mean. It's the like weird astronaut looking guy or whatever.
It's got two big letters, VR.
I'm pretty sure there's an astronaut. If you look, anyways, yeah, new place. There's lots of VR places. HTC actually opened an official Vive VR place in Shenzhen.
Really?
Yeah, they announced a partnership with Shenwang, one of China's largest internet cafe software providers. And the first arcade being built in Shenzhen is one of many that are planned.
What do you know what that's like? What is a official HTC VR place look like?
They have kind of a car setup with steering wheels and stuff that you sit in and drive a car. All these just like different tools and things designed to enhance.
I have not been to a VR bar that has that stuff.
The general thing has been these kind of VR cafes, I guess, that are like rug on the floor.
They're like, you know, it's like little, an apartment.
It's like an apartment. It's like someone's apartment. Yeah. And they have like four VR set up
there. Right. So we have this one spot, which we've been to. I've been there several times. Our kind of VR spot in our CJF group, we have a couple people who've been there. Basically, the way it works is it's a residential apartment, and they've converted the apartment into a VR cafe where people can come and play games. And so they sell memberships. I think it's about $50 for how many hours? Like 5 hours or something like that? It's about $10 an hour, basically. And they have the Vive, HTC Vive. They've got four of them. And they're wired such that they're hanging from the ceiling, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Cool arrangement. And they have four kind of beefy gaming desktop computers, which are connected to the HTC Vives. And the games are 100% pirated, pretty much. They're like
most of them.
All of them are just like pirated games. And they've got this massive catalog of games. And you just tell them what you want to play, and they load it up.
And if they don't have it, they're like, we'll have it for you next time.
Yeah, they're really nice people, actually. They are running Steam there. So, like, I've had some cases where I'm like, actually, can you download it from Steam? Because it's been updated like 50 times since you pirated it.
But these places have been popping up and getting really popular because people are interested in VR. But, I mean, it is really pricey considering what the average income is for a Chinese user. They're more interested in going on a regular basis to a place like an internet cafe or these VR startup places than spending all the money on a new computer and a new VR, and let alone having the space to do that.
Yeah, it's great. I was listening to a podcast recently, a gaming podcast, where they were talking about which VR games they've played recently. And two of the people on the podcast had both HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift.
Wow.
And they're like, oh yeah, I haven't played any VR games recently. Just like, oh, nothing really strikes me. And like, it's such a hassle to like set it all up and like go through that whole process. And hearing that just reminded me of like how great it is to have a place nearby where you can pay $10 and just play any game you want. And they worry about everything else. Like, that is really the ideal way to do VR, I think.
Yeah, it's super exciting. So, I mean, it's a certain type of growth that we're seeing in China that I don't think is happening anywhere else with VR right now.
Yeah. And the economy of this kind of thing really makes a lot of sense in China because these are apartments, like we said. So, they're not like, you know,
official they're places not storefronts,
you know. Yeah, like they're certainly breaking some kind of zoning law, like if zoning laws even exist in China. And so the cost is really low. I mean, to rent this apartment is probably like $500 a month.
Yep.
And then they buy PCs and HTC Vives, and they charge $10 an hour, and they have four of these stations. I mean, if you do the numbers, like it all adds up. I mean, it's all like a pretty reasonable business model, you know, where you can actually make a little bit of money, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were in the West, like the United States, it'd be very difficult. I mean, you'd have to charge a lot more than $10.
Well, the VR market here is projected to be worth about $8.5 billion in just 4 years with all the new companies starting up, all the interest surrounding it. So,
yeah, I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah, like that I said, projected. Like I think it's a lot, but I mean,
If, let's say, there's some kind of breakthrough where people are using their phones for VR, then I think that that's possible.
Well, people are using phones. There's a ton of devices designed to use VR on phones for sale that is super cheap and accessible to anyone on Taobao that are selling. Maybe not a lot. I don't know the exact numbers, but as cheap as like 30 yuan or something.
Yeah, they're really not big, though.
It's not like these VR bars that we're going to. It's not as popular as that.
What I'm saying is if there was like an open source Android VR kind of platform, or if Apple was like, we're doing VR now, here's how it works, and you could use an iPhone for it, and it had like some kind of hit game in VR, then that would give it the kind of juice that it needs to become truly mainstream. And at that point, then it's not hard to imagine it becoming an $8 billion business in China, for example, because mobile phones are huge here. Smartphones, This is like a mobile first country.
I read a survey that said about 40% of the people that consider themselves gamers here only play on phone.
Right. China is the world's largest mobile games market in the world, over $10 billion. And it had a 41% increase in growth from 2015 to 2016.
That's nuts.
And it's expected to be $28.9 billion by 2019, according to data from Newzoo Mobile Market Intelligence.
Wow.
And I believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like take the subway here, you see everyone. Yeah. Everyone has like a pretty nice smartphone. Everyone is using it all the time. Everyone is buying things with it all the time. They're ordering delivery food on it. They're ordering
watching movies.
Yes, everything you can imagine, like all the above.
Checking their calendar, making phone calls, sending messages, anything.
Yes, it all happens through the phone.
Calling taxis, renting bicycles.
Yeah, it's like you don't even need a computer for almost anything in China. So it seems like the phone is certainly the primary go-to device for most people. So anything else we should say before we wrap this up? Let's talk about what games we've been playing recently.
Yeah. My hard drive crashed and I've been struggling to get games back on it. I was looking through games to play with my friend last night and I loaded up Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Oh yeah.
We did not make it very far. That is a challenging game.
It is a challenging game.
But I enjoyed getting back into it and would like to spend some more time. I would like to make some real progress in that game. It's super fun. And
super fun.
I think it's cool that you can load your own music into it if you don't like that techno whatever.
No, no. You got to use the default music. It was inspired by Michael Jackson's Thriller. I know the developer, Ryan Clark. I met him at GDC China. We went to KTV together.
Wow. Oh, that was maybe a year and a half ago.
Something like that. Yeah. He was inspired by Michael Jackson's Thriller.
It's fun. It's like I like the music. Vibe. It's upbeat, like kind of fun. So.
It's good music. It's a good contrast between the setting of the game and the disco music.
Yeah, I remember when we played it at CGF, you loaded some custom music up onto it, and it was really difficult for people to catch on to. I mean, the beat's so integral to that. And the soundtrack for that game goes along with that really well.
Yeah.
So, what about you?
I've been playing Dreaming Sarah. I had a conversation with Leon recently where he recommended this Japanese game called Yume Nikki. And the game is actually popular in China too, which I found. I started reading about it. It's kind of an Undertale looking NES kind of style game. And it's like a super out there RPG maker game. Very similar to Undertale. And I started reading about it and I found that it was mentioned that it was a great influence to Dreaming Sarah, which is this dream-like kind of adventure game, retro indie game. And I realized that I have it in my Steam library. So having all these...
Oh, you already had it.
Yeah, so here's a good example of like having all these cheap games on Steam leads you to buy like hundreds and hundreds of games, which I haven't even played, like literally. And this is very common also. It's not like, you know, I'm the only person doing this, but...
Well, it's between that and both of us being on the Humble Monthly and everything. Between all of that, it's hard to keep track of what you have. I am constantly surprised at some of the stuff I find in my library.
Right. So I was like, Dreaming Sarah, this game looks interesting. I think I've heard of that. And I'm like, I look it up on Steam and it's like, this is in your library. I'm like, oh, shit.
I'm going to play that.
Yeah. So I load it up, play that. Really cool game. Super abstract, very bizarre. And a short game only takes a couple hours, so I recommend checking it out. I think you'd like it.
Yeah,
it's like dreaming this surreal kind of dream, like lucid dreaming sort of landscape.
Sounds right up my alley.
Yeah.
All right.
So thank you for listening to the podcast. You can check out our previous three episodes on our website at chundugaming.com. You can also find the podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. If you have a moment to leave a review for the podcast on either of those platforms, we would really appreciate it. And we have video casts on our YouTube page, which is just Chundu Gaming. And that is where Austin takes these recordings and puts videos of the games we're talking about to him. What are you going to put on this one?
Oh, well...
just like lawyers fighting it out in court.
Yeah, yeah, that seems reasonable. Yeah, you know, a bunch of angry fists and
just like communist soldiers marching.
Nah, this whole one's just gonna be censored.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that'll work. Anyway, thank you for listening. We'll see you guys next time.